Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Timothy J. Foley, Director of Client Computing and Library Services at Lehigh University, and Gail Frisch, Team Leader of Desktop and Scientific Computing at Lehigh University. The session is entitled PGP Whole Disk Encryption Implementation.
I want to welcome everybody to this morning's session. Can you hear me okay? Okay. I'm John Allen with Baylor University, going to be convening the session this morning. I'd like to ask everyone to turn off their cell phones to begin with. This morning we're going to be having a session about PGP whole disk encryption. We're going to have Timothy J. Foley, Director of Client Computing and Library Services from Lehigh University, and Gail Fritschi, Team Leader of Desktop and Scientific Computing from Lehigh University.
Hi, everyone. I don't know how many of you were in the last session, but I'm not going to have as many jokes. It was a really good session. So as we move forward, whole disk encryption, what we're going to be covering, first of all, I'm going to just give you, everyone asked me what the size of Lehigh is usually when they're talking to me. So this is basically, Lehigh is about 60 miles north of Philadelphia. So we're close to the Phillies, and we're all watching for the game tonight. So. As you can see, this is our ranking. We have about 6,900 students. It's usually about 6,500 students, 450 faculty, 1,200 staff. The interesting thing is that the breakdown, which is changing rapidly. We're basically a Windows campus, but our Apple Macintoshes are really becoming more abundant. This year, we had about 42% of our freshmen arrive on campus with Macintoshes. So we see that as a big shift in our environment. The other thing that's interesting about Lehigh is we are a merged organization. By that I mean not that we just have a vice provost above library and technology. We also have integrated teams. So client services, which is my group, has librarians and computing consultants and instructional technologists. We have teams that are led by librarians. We have teams that are led by and they're cross-functional teams. So we have an interesting organization. The other groups, as you can see by organizational structure, are probably more like what you know, like library systems and collections, library acquisitions, that's cataloging. But in client services is usually where people come together and start working on joint projects. So that's Lehigh's organizational structure. Okay, so this presentation is just going to be talking about encryption. And what we're going to cover, first of all, is why should you encrypt laptops? Why should you encrypt desktops? Why should you encrypt PDAs? What are your risks and things like that? I'm also going to talk briefly about Lehigh's committee structure, how we do our security policies, how we do our data standards and things like that, and how encryption kind of rolls into that, and how Lehigh actually goes through the process of approving people's laptops to encrypt a person's laptop, a faculty member's or a staff member's laptop, how you go through the process of, you know, actually one of our recommendations is to encrypt desktops. So what are our committee structures for that? And then after that, Gail, who's been leading this PGP project, is going to cover our PGP pilot program, our implementation plans, where we are, and some of the issues and roadblocks that you should think of as you move forward in encryption. And before I go forward, I'm kind of curious in the audience, how many people have implemented an encryption program on their campus? Okay, oh, that's good. That's very good. That's interesting. I'm not sure if it's PGP or not. We'll talk a little bit about how we came to the conclusion to use PGP. So why do you need to encrypt? Well, as you can see, every time these are current incidences, but every time we look at this, we see, you know, you can just go every, probably weekly, you can see incidents of this, of identity theft happening. And they can happen at any time. As you can see, the University of Iowa College of Engineering are already notifying people that personal identifiable information has been released to someone. That's the personal identifiable information is what you want to worry about. Tennessee State, just a little drive, a little flash drive. Somebody lost that and had information on it, social security numbers. hacker. Now, this is actually a system that was attacked, and personal information and social security numbers were on it for 11,000 students. And these are just very small incidents, because if you look at around the country, if you look down at the bottom, the reported breaches since January 15th, 2005, there's been 245 million breaches. So that means, and these are ones that were reported. I shudder to think of ones that didn't get reported. You know, someone lost their laptop and just said, well, there was nothing on it. But these were things that were actually reported. And the other thing that has happened over the last few years is states have created security breach laws. And what they basically say is if you have a security breach with personal identifiable information on it, so you have a little flash drive that has personal identifiable information on it, you are required to notify the people that this has happened. And these breaches become very, very expensive, as I will show you. This other chart is kind of interesting, the growth in the number of individual breaches. As you can see, since 2005, that growth has been exponential of these breaches. And the other thing that's interesting is the number of states. We're almost at all the states having a breach law in effect, so that's kind of an interesting statistic. Every time this is. So then the government is looking at federal legislation to talk about the same thing. How do you respond to a breach when it happens at your university? Okay, and what does it cost? Well, that's kind of an interesting figure. This is cost per record. So if you had 11,000 records that were breached, you could multiply it by around $250 a record. And that's what it cost you to report a breach and to help the people whose information was leaked to ensure them that it wasn't going to be compromised. Okay. So what does Lehigh do? And we have had some of these breaches. Thankfully, we haven't hit the newspaper and had, 11,000 breaches. But we have had some small breaches. We have had some laptops that were stolen with a small amount of information on it. We've accidentally sent something out with information on it. So we've had some breaches. And I'm going to outline what Lehigh does. We have all this in a security plan that we cannot share with anyone. That is what our lawyers have told us. So we do have the security plan, but we really, our lawyers don't want us to share our security plan with anyone. So what happens first is we have an information security officer. That officer works immediately with technical staff and legal staff to determine the extent of the problem if it requires a legal response. So that's kind of the first thing. I mean, try to put a lid on the problem as immediately as possible if you can. Stop it as quickly as possible. Some of these breaches are kind of, this is dealing with encryption, but you need this, at any time. With a phishing thing, you need to have some response. If some phishing thing hits and 20 people on university give away their passwords, you need to have immediate reaction. And so that's part of it. Then the technical staff determines the extent of the problem, and then they try to minimize the damage as much as possible, and they move into action immediately. And we also have our university communications department involved, and we develop a communication plan with, what happens if the newspapers get a hold of this? What will be our press release? Okay, so those are things that you should have in place, to be prepared for a security breach, because if it's not in place and you're kind of running around trying to figure out what to do, so everyone knows that this is basically the requirements. And we've actually prepared press releases that we've never given out because it never hit that level. But even a small breach could hit the papers. Okay. The other thing we do is we offer credit monitoring services to those affected individuals. And this costs about $15 a month. So we do that for at least a year. So if you had, 50,000 records breached, just for the credit, this doesn't include our forensics or looking into an incident, but just to do the credit services is $15 a month, and we do that for at least a year. And we have done these things, but luckily, they have been small incidents. And that's one of the reasons why when we take this through our advisory committees, we get approval because we can say, if we have this incident and we haven't control for this, you know, we could be affected to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. I know I heard of a company last year that spent like $2 million just to kind of squelch a breach of security. Now, the other thing you saw, there were 44 states there. Every state's breach law is a little bit different. We have obviously know Pennsylvania's breach law, but Pennsylvania law is one of the weaker ones, actually. It says a name combined with a social security number, a driver license number, or a credit card, that constitutes a notifiable breach. And by law, we have to notify everyone whose personal identifiable information was breached. So by law, you have to do that. And then we add on all the costs that are involved. Okay. Now, how do you actually determine to do an encryption project? And what kind of steps are involved? And again, this is basically how Lehigh has their whole advisory structure involved. We have something called an Advisory Council for Information Services. This sets university-wide information services policy. This is a committee of faculty, staff, and administrators who set overall policy. And this is the committee that we would hope would say, look, staff, all your computers, all your laptops need to be encrypted. Okay, so that's the advisory council. Now, this council has a number of committees reporting to it. It has a data advisory council reporting to it. And this is basically, it ensures the data standards are maintained and enforced. Okay, so the data advisory council works at a level where all kinds of things, like password changes, anything involving encryption goes through the Data Advisory Council. And we also have a Data Standards Committee that deals with our administrative systems and how people enter stuff into our administrative systems. And then this is the committee that's dealing with encryption. We have an e-security committee that reports up through to the Data Advisory Council and then eventually goes up to the Advisory Council for Information Services. And the e-security committee right now is working on two projects. The first one is the one we're talking about today, called data encryption. The committee got a charge, and they've actually kind of been focusing on the PC, addressed the best way to encrypt PCs, Macs, PDAs, and other portable devices and backups. And then we also have another very big project called identity management, and we're redesigning our current authentication system, which is a major, major project. So the point of this slide, however, is that the data encryption subcommittee has a recommendation. They go up through the e-security committee, present it there, and then they go to the data advisory council, and then eventually it gets up to the advisory council for information services. And that's basically how Lehigh is kind of structured. Okay. Now, Gail is going to talk about how the data encryption committee was formed and where we are in this whole process, where we are in that structure.
Good morning, or I should say, good afternoon. Close. Anyway, this data encryption committee was actually formed a couple years ago. If any of you are impatient to get something going, it takes quite some time to actually get a committee together, and as most of you know, and go through the whole evaluation process and actually implement something. So it's been quite some time. The first thing we did as a committee is we looked at various methods of encryption to actually determine what kind of encryption would be best for the university. We looked at file-based encryption. We looked at container encryption, such as using TrueCrypt, for example, and we looked at whole disk encryption. We obviously determined that whole disk encryption was the option of choice, basically because it encrypted the entire hard drive and prevented any type of data leaks of any kind, so that we thought that would be the best way in the event that anybody lost any laptops and so forth. Okay, the next thing we did was we selected several products, which I'll get to in a little bit, to be tested and evaluated those products. We developed certain criteria We looked at platform capability. We looked at our percentage of Macs versus PCs versus Linux machines, and kind of came up with a general solution there. Ease of administration was a big key criteria, because we weren't planning on hiring anybody come in and actually manage this project. We were going to rely on people like me, as well as our staff of computing consultants, to help implement this. Cost was a big factor as well. Okay, I put this slide on here just to kind of give you an idea of how whole disk encryption works. No encryption is basically your data is not protected at all. File encryption, encryption process takes place at the operating system, and the files are encrypted from there. With whole disk encryption, there's an authentication that occurs prior to boot, and you log in, and then you're basically your machine's unlocked, and you can go from there. And that's pretty much how whole disk encryption works. Okay, these are a list of evaluated products we looked at. We had a pretty pretty extensive list. This was actually the short list. We looked at WinMagic, obviously. PointSec, SecureStars, DriveCrypt is actually the name of that one, and Altamaco. And most of you probably have seen these at one point or another. The next thing we did was we performed benchmarks on a couple of computers of equal power. And what we did was we purchased this performance test. It was the name of the product we used. And what it does is it basically performs CPU tests, memory tests, disk rewrite tests. It's pretty basic. And what we did was we ran a benchmark with a non-encrypted machine, and then we encrypted it a machine with each product, and then we ran the benchmarks against each product to kind of come up with a consensus on how performance was hit. The performance in general was affected as far as the disk rewrite test was concerned. Memory, CPU was very little, and they all the products seemed to be pretty much even. So, as far as the benchmarks are concerned. Then we selected PGP as a product of choice, and recommended that all the laptops and desktops on campus be eventually encrypted one point or another. Okay, so you want to ask your why did we select PGP desktop and universal server? I just want to just explain a little bit of how when I mention universal server here, it's a little the universal server is actually a server that runs in the back end that enrolls each person that uses a PGP desktop client, and it rolls a disk recovery token in the background in case you need to forget your password or you need to. To get in that way, and it's also a way to propagate updates to a user's desktops and so forth. We'll get to that a little bit later here. Okay, I think one of the big things we looked at here was obviously platform compatibility. Since we're majority Windows, the Macintosh growth on campus has really grown significantly over the last couple years. And with the Macintosh client, at the time that we evaluated this, they had PGP had a Macintosh client, but it wasn't a true whole disk encryption client. It was more of a container type encryption client. They have recently, probably in the last couple months, released a full Macintosh whole disk encryption solution. So we haven't yet tested that at this point, but that's the next thing we need to do. Another reason we chose them was there were limited hardware requirements for a server. We're running Universal Server in a virtual environment in our machine room. It was very easy to set up. At this point in time, we're looking at the server load in a virtual environment. It's probably we have close to 100 users using this right now, and it's probably has raised to 2% capacity, maybe something like that. So there's a lot of expandability there. Limited server administration. Our systems guys actually said they called it an appliance is what they called it. You know, so little interaction with the user once you install it. There's some administration associated with the software itself, but that's pretty much it. The server policies and customized installers. When you install Universal Server, you can create a customized installer based on what kind of policies you want to set for a university. An example of a policy would be if you want to force encryption of USB external devices, for example. So if somebody has a PGP encrypted laptop, they plug a USB device in there, it will automatically encrypt that device. Obviously prompts you for it, but it will automatically encrypt that or force the encryption. We didn't think that was a very good idea because what happens if a faculty member encrypts their USB key, goes to a conference like this where they provide a laptop for you, and this doesn't have PGP on it, you're kind of stuck. So that wasn't a good idea. It integrates well with Microsoft's Active Directory. So you know, we are an Active Directory shop, so passwords are synced, and we can go from there. It works very well. Easy recovery of encryption keys, for example. If you somebody forgets their password, you can recover the token from the Universal Server and easily log in to the user's machine. We also are looking into PGP is. They have a dongle that you can, it's a generic dongle you can use to log into anybody's machine. For example, if somebody forgets their password, these dongles can be used to plug into your USB and you can log in. You know, and we could have our computing consultants do that if they need to work on a machine without somebody being there, for example. We're in the process of working on getting one of those to test it. So. Price is a big factor. When we looked at all these packages, PGP has some deep discounts for educational institutions. We're probably talking 30 to 40% of list at this point. The new pricing, I have 50% on here. That was the initial educational pricing, but it's even dropped more from there. Another thing is just to mention the PGP desktop. The solution in general includes a mail client with it as well, and the mail client we have it disabled at this point, but PGP just came out with a PGP Desktop Universal Server Limited a version, which just includes whole disk encryption only, and that's much cheaper than the bundled package as well. So just want to keep that as a note. Okay, PGP whole disk encryption, a little bit of a closer look here. Okay, this is basically what you see with your with the PGP desktop client. It's pretty basic client for an end user or a client for an end user to use. We have some pretty non-computer literate individuals using this, and they're able to navigate through it fairly well. They're basically just a few options here. Obviously, you can encrypt your whole disk. You can create a virtual disk on your hard drive, which is kind of like a container encryption. You can put an encrypted container on your hard drive as opposed to encrypting the whole thing. And you can also, there's an option there to shred your free space. And what that does is that any free space that of deleted files and so forth on your hard disk, you can select that option. It'll go through and it will shred everything to make it, or zero everything out to have nothing, no deleted file remnants sticking around. All right, this is a whole disk encryption option. You see your list of drives above, and all you have to do is highlight the drive and click on the encrypt button, and you're off to the races. One thing to keep in mind here is when you do encrypt a drive, depending on the size and amount of data and so forth, it probably takes 1 to 3 hours to fully encrypt the drive. So that's probably good to note. If you notice the options over on the right-hand side here, the maximum CPU usage, if you select that one, it will reduce your time to encrypt, but it basically will take all of your CPU power and won't let you do anything else. So if you do select that, you can streamline the process a little bit, but the user is going to have to probably start it maybe over their lunch hour and just let it go from there. Okay, here's just a snapshot of the universal server. And these are just the first set of our users that are enrolled. And one thing to keep in mind about this is where, you know, an administrator can create a customized installer from this and so forth. And also can monitor, you know, what machines are encrypted, who's logged in, et cetera, et cetera. One thing to keep in mind, too, is that a user can have more than one. A lot of users have more than one PC. They can have those encrypted, and what it will do is the first time you enroll, it will put your username there on the list, but each PC that you enroll after that, it will just list them under your name. So you can have more than one PC. As far as licensing is concerned, you want to keep in mind about, as far as the universal server is concerned, that this is my understanding from the rep, that there's only one universal server license per user. In other words, if a user has two PCs, for example, they'll need two licenses of PGP Desktop, they'll need one license of Universal Server. So just to keep that in mind. Okay, here's just here's another screenshot of Universal Server as well. We have this Universal Server, we have it on a scheduled backup, backups every day, and this is just a list of the console that shows you the successful backups, and it's on a schedule with the rest of our backups and so forth, so everybody's recovery tokens are backed up and so forth. Okay, here's just a screenshot I put on here having to do with some of the policies that are available in Universal Server. If you can see, There's the option I was talking about, force encryption of removable USB disks. Just select that option, and that'll force everybody with the customized installer to have to encrypt USB devices. Okay. Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about our pilot program. We initially purchased 100 copies of PGP Desktop and Universal Server. They're two licenses. They usually, the software vendors bundle them into one. They'll just say, you know, 100 copies of Universal Server and PGP, even though they're separate licenses. We grouped individuals for this test into three groups. We thought the technical users or the computing consultants and technical users would be the best bet for the first wave, and then the admin users, and then select a few academic users in the dean's offices and so forth. Training was scheduled for each group. We scheduled training for each group, have them come in, explain what we're going to do, the whole process, how encryption works, and et cetera. And that was probably a really smart thing to do because people are a little apprehensive about this whole thing to begin with. Okay, then we set policies, obviously, and then created a customized installer. And we, at this point in time, we don't have any other than, you know, we have a shared LAN drive for individuals, but we don't really have campus-wide any global backup strategy for PC desktops. So we purchased some high-capacity USB hard drives. We duplicated their data. We ghosted the machines prior to installing it, just so, you know, in case something happened. And plus, it was a peace of mind for the clients as well, knowing they'd have an image sitting there. We also created a Cold Fusion feedback mechanism. It's all web-based. It has when we ask clients that install this to log into this website and give us any feedback on how the install went, how the PGP is working, is it conflicting with any applications, etc. So that worked out really well. Okay, the results, we installed it. It's actually installed on 69 computers, 54 users. Some had duplicate computers in there. And this is the feedback we received. Over half the people reported no problems. And then a few people reported some slowness, basically, some slowness. And people complained about the length of time it took to encrypt a machine and so forth. So, in general, it was a success. I would call it a success. And our security policy officer said, if a little bit of slowness is all they have to deal with, then, we can deal with it. So, all right. Next thing it did was we created a SurveyMonkey survey to send out to users to find out how things went. This is a snapshot of some of the questions that we asked in our survey and some of the results. Basically the length of time. And the one that I like is the, why did you decide to use this software? I expected, my boss told me, it would be a little bit higher, but it is, only about a quarter of the people. And there are some interesting things we got from here. Most interesting thing to me was the regular backups thing. 27% performing regular backups was seemed to be high to me. I thought it would be a lot lower than that. As far as the backups being encrypted, that was seemed a little high to me as well. So, so forth. And another thing we, another question I thought was a very important question was the last one: how much of a concern is it for, if you forget your password or your machine's corrupt or so forth? Okay. Okay, implementation plan. When we took this, right now we're probably at about, we're pushing 100 PCs at this point. I'm in the process now of proposing this to our directors group to see if we can get some more funding for some more laptops. And our plan is to get all the laptops first and then start working on the desktops. And as far as the desktops are concerned, we thought the good idea would be to bundle it in with the price of a new PC. Right now, the pricing for a universal server and PGP license is right around $32 to $34 a client, $32 to $34 a client. So right in that range, it would be easy to bundle into a price of a new PC. And as far as desktops are concerned, once we got the laptops out of the way, once the desktops are, we could roll those over on a, most of our desktops are in a 3-year life cycle. So within a 3-year period, we would have, the whole campus blanketed with this. Okay, PGP training for staff. There are some PGP courses offered. The two closest places, as far as administration of the universal server as well as the desktop, the closest two places are Utah and California. So we're in Pennsylvania. So the training's probably around, I think I quoted around $2,000 for the training, maybe a little bit less than that, plus expenses. So it is something to keep in mind. Our time frame in general is to, right now we actually have 110 licenses that we have purchased, and we're in the process of, we're all just about used up all of our licenses, and we're going to get the remaining of our desktops because we have everything in place, or our laptops, I should say, and then we're going to start with the desktops. Okay, issues and roadblocks. The user's time to encrypt is probably one of the top on the list, mainly because finding a person's time to devote an hour to their PC or up to 3 hours to their PC, depending on the size of the hard drive. And that is a roadblock. I keep telling clients that, we can put it at the end of the day, we can just start running it, but, they're a little bit apprehensive at leaving their machine on some cases and so forth. So that is one roadblock. Another roadblock was our computing consultants. There are 16 computing consultants that report to me, and they were very reluctant about this. I don't know if it had to do with piling more work on them or whatever, but they were very reluctant about accepting the fact that they need to go out and put this client on users' machines. Hmm.
the client resistance to install the software. There's a little bit of apprehensive on, you know, what's going to happen to my data? Am I going to lose my data? What happens if my machine doesn't boot? All kinds of questions like that came up. So that's one of the reasons we had the training in general, was to sort of go over these issues and explain it to clients and so forth. All right. Okay, in the development of a reliable client backup solution, we actually have another project in the works right now to offer a desktop backup solution to clients. I'm working on that project to offer 20 gigabytes of backup for every desktop client on campus, not counting students, obviously, staff and faculty. But that is a roadblock because, we can't be toting these big USB hard drives around campus with us all the time, and it's a matter of backing that data up and archiving, et cetera. So that's an issue. Okay, these are questions that we asked ourselves as we were going through this process. You know, what happens if a user forgets his or her password? We obviously have the recovery token. We have the USB dongle that we can use once that is implemented and so forth. What happens is if a user changes his or her password on and off campus, one of the things to keep in mind, we've tested this under, running it on a VPN, and we can install PGP from home, and it will communicate and enroll a client on the universal server. But what happens if a user isn't on VPN, it'll automatically make any changes or communications with the universal server once they come back on campus and connect to the network. So how do we handle the installation for campus users with the automatic installer? We have with all the policies, it's a pretty simple installer that we can propagate to users. We can just have them download it from a secure website and go from there. How do we handle encrypting USB devices? PGP has an option within the desktop to encrypt a USB drive with a password only. In other words, a user can encrypt a USB device and then take it to a machine that doesn't have PGP on it and type the password in and use that device. It's called PGP Zip, and it's part of the PGP desktop client. So that's what we're pretty much recommending at this point, because the forced PGP, like I mentioned before, the USB devices wouldn't work very well. Okay, I just explained that one. And then it's the whole backup issue, which, like I mentioned, we're working on a project right now to hopefully alleviate this problem. And that's pretty much all I had at this point. I'd like to open it up for questions.
I actually had two questions here. One of them short, and the one's a little bit longer. The first question I had is: did you decide to do this on all laptops and desktops, or was there some criteria that you used if they only had sensitive information on the laptop, or did you force everybody that had a laptop to do it, not knowing?
Yeah, it was a forced, I mean, everything, blanket, the whole campus, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and it went to the data advisory committee, as Tim had alluded to, the committee structure.
And it's sensitive info on there or not, you weren't going to hear that, you wanted them to.
Exactly.
And because the second item is, one of the things that we're wrestling with right now is exactly the client backup before you install it. One of the things, I guess, PGP tells you is that you should run a disk optimizer on the disk, like Disk Keeper or something like that, and then you should back up the client data, obviously, before you do this. And one of the questions that I had, they came to me with the Blu-ray player or these types of these types of USB drives. And the question I had, well, if there's sensitive information on there and you ghost it, what are you going to do with those drives? Because then those drives become a liability for you.
You're right.
So I was just curious how you handle. I mean, I would imagine you image the drive, which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But then how do you make sure that those drives are protected? Do you leave them with the user? Do you lock them up somewhere?
Well, they're we do lock them up somewhere. They're each computing consultant team. We're it's a merged organization. We have different teams of computing consultants that supported different colleges, and we assigned a disk to each computing consultant team, and they haul it around with them, and then it's just locked up at the end of the day.
Yeah, it was acceptable for your security officer in your campus to have that risk where they're locked up?
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
Okay. And then from the user's standpoint at that point, if something happens to their machine later on down the line, you can bring it back to the point that you took that snapshot. You let them know that. But, I mean, it's not going to have all the data that they have on there unless they've
done. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, our big hole here is that backup solution.
That
has to happen. How many people, I'm just curious how many people in this room have a backup solution for all their desktops? Thank you. It's good figures for me when I go back and say, this is just crazy.
I mean, we have 100,000 PCs on campus.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, we'll start. Well, as far as the folder file and folder encryption and container encryption, we're pretty much recommending that people do that for USB drives only, you know, or to transport their data from one place to another.
The script runs from the web policy.
From the.
When they do the encryption.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Oh, that's. Well, at this point in time, we have three individuals that can retrieve the token, and one of them is one of our key system administrators. Myself is a backup, and we have one computing consultant that has access that can retrieve it. So between the three of us, somebody's there normally. Just one. Yep. Okay, we'll go back to the. Okay. No. Actually, that problem or that issue hasn't even been addressed as far as double encrypting. You're saying if the PGP is the right. machine's unlocked and somebody comes through the network and hacks your machine. That's
the reason I'm saying that is because, like, for example, in New York State, the difference.
Well, it is part of the training. We also offer a security seminar, which we have a series of seminars we offer every semester, and one of them is on security, and we do cover the difference between whole disk and file encryption and container encryption. So that's offered in that respect. It would be a good solution to double encrypt would be to use the virtual disk option within PGP to create another container and things that that need it. Okay, next back here. Zero. We haven't had any instance other than testing. The need for it hasn't been demonstrated, and those tokens are backed up as you saw on every day. They are backed up, but other than testing to make sure it works, we haven't had a user call us up at this point. We've had zero data loss.
Is that the only reason you need the key recovery
for
somebody that has forgotten their password?
Well, if somebody was fired, for example, or left the university, that kind of thing, would be a good one too. So, okay, next. Yeah, we've had some complaints of slowness. I mean, this software, as well as any other whole disk encryption, the read-write performance of your disks will be affected a little bit. I mean, there's a slight delay there, but we've had a couple complaints, but nothing that where it puts somebody dead in the water. It's just a complaint that they have to wait a little bit longer. So, all right, next.
Encryption decryption is done in async, so there's no performance hit on that.
I mean, we did look at hardware encryption options when we started this thing with the, for example, I went to InfoSecurity in New York. They had a bunch of vendors there that were selling, hardware encrypted hard drives. And we looked at the cost ratio, management of the keys, for example, that kind of thing. Kind of swayed us away from that. Now, I know that Dell, you can go onto Dell's website and you can order a hardware encrypted machine now, or a hardware encrypted drive from Dell, right? Right.
If the user loses network access, can't get the server, what happens to the network access?
Yeah. The server is basically just to, it's there to defeat any updates to the software, to house your disk recovery tokens, but your function is normal. Mobile users, they won't get updates until they come back and connect to the network and so forth. But that's the same as Windows Update, for that matter. So, works the same way. So. Checkpoint. We did not look at Checkpoint's product. No. Well, our PDA solution at this point is to supply a password on your PDA. That's basically at this point. We're looking into solutions to do the SD-RAM cards and things, but we don't have anything solidified in a policy yet. So, yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. The whole disk encryption option.
And secondly, did you feel that the training in Utah, California would absorb that? I mean, if the universal service is kind of straightforward, is it more going out there?
Well, that's a good question. We were just debating that recently. I'm kind of on the fence with that one because the PGP whole disk encryption training covers the whole suite. In other words, it covers mail. If you're going to use a universal server, that's only a piece of that training. So that's the piece I'm struggling with right now. I don't know whether or not it would be effective or worth it. So, yeah. As far as the unwritten policy would be to decrypt it prior to shipping it, and that would probably be, in most cases, I mean, probably 90% of the hardware failures we send out are hard disks anyway. So the unwritten policy would be to decrypt it and send it out. Then getting this. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So, all right.
I'm curious what you recommended encrypting desktops as well as laptops.
Well, they recommended that just to put a blanket on the whole university, pretty much. We had a couple desktops stolen at one point out of our, I think it was
student affairs.
So those walk just as, not as easy as laptops, but they walk as well. So, all right, next.
You don't have any laptops that are shared by like a handful of users, so how do you handle those?
Well, you can have multiple users enrolled on one laptop, so you just have to have some be proactive about who's going to be logging on to it and so forth. But
what do all of y'all connect to the network if you have any that have like a local kind of generic login maybe for the classroom users?
Oh, really? Yeah. Not really. We haven't really discussed that. So, okay.
Do any of your laptops have CompuTrace? And does PGP affect how CompuTrace works?
We don't have any CompuTrace. We don't have CompuTrace on anything. Oh, yeah. No, we don't have anything with CompuTrace. All right. Next. I mean, we had a couple faculty members attend the training for the pilot.
Is your plan to have
once we blanket this to the whole university, yes. I mean, we would like to offer something very similar to that, just, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, informational session, because and it took about, I mean, I don't know, the training took somewhere around 45 minutes, I believe. It doesn't take long. It's pretty simple. It's up to the user. We kind of left it up to the user. As part of the pilot program, some of the users chose to encrypt it themselves. We have some pretty straightforward instructions that we could send them. Some users didn't want anything to do with it and wanted somebody to come out and do it. So it's really up, you know, to the user. So. It's tied to Active Directory. It worked out really well, really well. The only hitch there is when a user initially changes their password. I don't know if we found a way around this, but if you so you're logged in, you change your password. The next time you boot, you have to use your old password the first time, and then once you log in through PGP, and then it will sync again. So. Yeah.
How did you change your Active Directory password requirements to make sure you have a strong passphrase or password at that point? And what are your current requirements?
The current requirements, I don't know. What are the, do you know what the
current requirements are? 6 characters, 2 special characters.
So that's fairly easy. It would be fairly easy to crowbar into one of the machines.
I don't know if it would be fairly easy. 6 characters and 2 special characters. Mm-hmm. That's our algorithm. When you go to change your password, you know, you know, we check. This is stuff we wrote ourselves, so we haven't changed that part of it at all.
Do you have a 30 or 60 day password change interval in Active Directory?
Every 6 months.
Okay.
Our passwords get changed at Lehigh every 6 months. Automatically, you know, we send people messages. And that was one of our concerns. You know, if you're out on a road and you change your password,
yeah,
is that gonna eventually sink? But it does. It's good.
I think we're a few minutes over, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. I ask everyone to go online, do the session evaluations, try to get those complete either when you're here or when you get back to your campuses. And I want to give a great round of applause to Gail and Tim for the presentation.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.